Hello, I'm Elvis Costello and welcome to Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland. My guest knows all about piano and jazz. As for in addition to a long and storied career, for the last 30 years, she has been the gracious host of this very program. To prepare, I listened again to some of the highlights of the show. One is constantly struck by the modest, almost apologetic manner in which the host approaches her duets with esteemed piano-playing guests. However, today she is going to have to let us sing her praises with no diminuendo. She is, of course, Marion McPartland. Welcome to Piano Jazz. The tables have turned.
The tables are turned. It's wonderful. That's really a different feeling, I must say.
It must be. Well, before we go any further, there's a song that has featured on Piano Jazz a number of times, and I'm going to be very bold here and say that I would like to sing it. I cannot think of any better song to such as this one to celebrate an enduring institution such as this show, and it's Our Love Is Here to Stay. Could we do that together, do you think?
Oh, I know we could, and it's such a great tune.
It's a great tune, and I hope it survives me singing it. It's very clear our love is here to stay, not for a year, but ever and a day. The radio and the telephone and the movies that we know may just be passing fences, and in time may go, but oh my dear, our love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they're only made of clay, but our love is here to stay. But oh, my dear, our love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time, the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they're only made of clay. Oh, our love is here to
to stay.
That was a treat.
Thank you.
I seldom get a chance to accompany you. What's going to happen next?
Well, I've got to be curious about the original brief for Piano Jazz. I mean, was there an idea when you first came to do the first series? Was it proposed to you that you would have a complete license to speak about everything, about the matters of piano and jazz?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was. They trusted that you did have this rapport with your...
They did.
Yeah.
Which was kind of nervy of them.
Well, it's been repaid with these 30
it
years.
It worked out, but when I started, I had the faintest idea. To begin with, I picked the wrong guest. I picked Mary Lou Williams because I adored her playing and respected her talent. And
she was the first guest?
Yeah, she was the first guest, and she kind of grumbled, and she was very tough. I should have had this show.
Let's listen to this opening exchange between you and Mary Lou Williams.
How do you explain this to your kids?
Like, how do I
say,
explain
what,
it?
Like, what's this chord? Like they say, like you play some chord like that.
I didn't
that.
Play a chord like that.
Well, but I mean, I know you didn't, but I'm saying a chord with
this.
A lot of notes. All right. So
but
how would you?
I tell them the chord. It's a B flat ninth, flat fifth in it. And I give them the chord.
It's funny because you try to guess what is going on in the mental picture of the room when you listen to these shows, as I have done to prepare for this conversation. The actual words that I wrote down were, I sense Mary Lou Williams was a little wary at the process, but she audibly relaxes over the course of the interview until towards the end you actually cajole her to vocalize.
Yeah.
Which is not something that she was known to do. So.
No, it's amazing.
So she, you really won her over.
When she sang the song, which I recall was called Rosa May, she did get very mellow after that.
Yeah, and she clearly wasn't a vocalist. It wasn't something that she did.
No.
You know, she didn't sound like a vocalist. It really sounded confidential. But what's so charming about it is it sounds that she is now at ease with you after a slightly haughty beginning. And by the end of it, she's more vulnerable and she's showing a side of herself to you, which I think is really remarkable. Well, let's have a listen, eh?
A little bit of love she'll give you, and then she'll steal away. A little bit of a sweet smile, you think you got it made. But you can tell by the way she talks, it's Rosa May. You can tell by the way she walks, it's Rosa May. Sometimes in the evening, when the moon is shining bright, you see her looking pretty, almost love in her eyes. Better beware of Rosa May. If you're not careful, she'll steal your heart away.
Was the decision to start with such a huge figure in jazz, but another woman, one that you really made consciously?
Yeah, it was kind of stupid of me.
No, I think it was absolutely wonderful of you.
Really?
Yeah, I really do, because it was absolutely fascinating, not least of all for the apparent unease that she had at first and the reserve. And by the end of it, she's singing like two old friends. She's singing a song just for the fun of it. I think that's a very big place to start. Jumping ahead to something that you've achieved with Piano Jazz, I think one of the great attractions of this program is the ability to discuss highly technical aspects of music. The conversations that you've had with your guests, they go into quite some detail about music, but it's done in a way that's accessible to the layman.
I think we had to do that.
But it's a compliment to you in the way in which you broach the subject or frame the question, that somebody who's quite a thinker about music, like Bill Evans, say, will suddenly say, I listened to the show that you did with him, and at one point you comment on the way he displaces his hands rhythmically, and he goes into quite some detail. Let's hear a bit of that, shall we?
Okay.
You know, the way phrases follow one another and their placement against the meter and so forth is something that I've worked on rather hard, and it's something I believe in. It has little to do with trends.
I wish you'd just show me what you mean about the displacement of the... Could you do that on that tune? Could you do a little bit of that? I mean, maybe I could play a bass line or something to help things along.
I could do it. I think I could illustrate that better on, say, All of You.
Oh, now, that's one of your great tunes, yeah.
I'll have to get into it a little bit, though.
Go ahead. You displaced it so much I couldn't find the place to come in. Looked at me and said, I was afraid. You know, I thought, boy, if I come in wrong, I'm going to throw this whole thing off.
Well, it's extraordinary to hear somebody of Bill Evans' level of achievement speak about the mechanical aspect of that goes into creating the magical thing that we hear. It's a compliment to you.
I mean, I thought he was a fascinating guy to talk to. I didn't even think that I was doing something for an audience. I was just listening to him talk for me. I was having fun.
Well, Marion, I think we should let people in on what's going on here. I mean, I'm Elvis Costello, turning the tables on Marion McPartland. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This is Piano Jazz. Well, Marion, your enthusiasm for your subjects is so apparent in your remarks. Your joy of spending time, in many cases with guests who are personal friends, such as Rosemary Clooney, really gives a different perspective, especially when you're in the studio with a singer. Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily play the piano. It also felt as if there was a sort of kinship of the experience of life as a woman in the business, in a way that doesn't come out of the conversation with Mary Lou Williams. It felt as if the conversation with Rosemary Clooney was one in which there were some shared confidences about the role of women in the business in the time that you had passed through.
Did you feel that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she spoke at the very top of the show about being on top form. You paid her the compliment saying she was on top form, as if she had actually got her life as a singer, as a musician, back after the role of raising a family. Let's hear a little bit of you in conversation with Rosemary Clooney.
Okay.
Hearing you just recently in concert, I just think you're better than ever. I don't know how you're doing it, but you must really be at the peak.
I think I'm liking to do it better. When I first started, I had 5 children in 5 years, and so you're constantly torn. Always my work involved a lot of traveling, and so I was always thinking, well, I wonder if I should make this Parent-Teachers Association. Can I fly back? Can I make it and still make the 9 o'clock show? You know, so I could never really concentrate on it, except at the very beginning of my career. So at this time in my life, with my 5 children grown, I can turn the key in the lock and go off and really do what I want to and concentrate on what I started doing all those years ago.
Isn't that great?
Isn't it?
It really
is. You know, there is some balance here of getting older. You know, there's a lot of crappy things that go on as you get older, but there are some good things too, and that's one of them.
Hearing Rosemary talk about those conflicts, really, and how she had resolved them, it made for a very different experience to hearing you talk with somebody, and less about the pianistic aspects, more about the
life.
Particularly the life and the way your choices in songs reflect that life. And although you don't sing yourself, I did actually sing the next tune that we're going to hear an excerpt from with former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Who?
No kidding.
Yeah, we used to be in vaudeville together. No, really, we. I was on the Conan O'Brien show, and they said, "Would you do a song with Madeleine Albright?" And I thought, "Well, if she's willing, and she has a lovely voice." So we did a little bit of "Don't Fence Me In." Now this is a song that you did with Rosemary Clooney. It's a beautiful song. It's a great cold water song. So let's hear a little bit of you and Rosemary Clooney.
Okay.
Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself. In the evening breeze, listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in. Just turn me loose. Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon till I lose my senses. Can't look at hobbles, and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
We were talking about Cole Porter. Your gift for an attraction to melody is something that runs through a lot of your conversations. I mean, you are as at ease in talking about the contents of songs with a singer like Rosemary Clooney or a singer-piano player like Shirley Horn. And you frequently comment on the lyric and on the story of the song. You make continued reference to the romanticism, and particularly the melancholic romanticism. Is that a quality that's within you, or one which you always look to? I mean, my favorite Rodgers and Hart song is Glad to Be Unhappy, so that tells you a lot, you know.
That's one I would like to.
Yeah. There's a period of time, I mean, Richard Rodgers is writing fantastic songs right into the early 60s at the same time as rock and roll and all these things are happening. But jazz musicians didn't really find so much of worth in the popular song. We were talking about Rodgers and Hart, Cole Porter. All of these songs have been very, very rich, and numerous other composers that inspired so much fantastic improvisation from jazz musicians. And then the tunes run out. Is that true?
I would say so. Yeah.
The beat changed, and the harmonic foundation is a lot simpler. And I obviously, as a starting out in rock and roll, I love those songs, but I understand how they don't really offer the same things as a, well, pick any one of those.
No, and you need something to sort of spur you on. I mean, I love the songs, all the Beatles songs, as is, but I couldn't get an idea from them necessarily for myself.
You've spoken to some contemporary pianists on Piano Jazz. It's not been exclusively people with very long careers. Some people are just right in the moment. Like Brad Mehldau, for instance, who's a remarkable pianist and composer. He will draw from contemporary rock songs and find something in them. But I suppose it's different because he's grown up in the time of hearing them, and maybe he hears them differently.
I don't know.
I mean, I once heard Jeff Keyser in the Village Vanguard play a David Bowie song in the style of Bud Powell. And it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. It was, it was sort of a party trick, but it was nevertheless to take a song like that and prove that, you know, he could evoke another era of piano playing using the foundation of this song. So maybe there's hope yet.
Yeah, maybe I'll go home and try that myself after we've had this conversation.
Well, it's time for some music then. How about we mentioned Rodgers and Hart, and Pete Malvani is kind enough to be here at the piano. I'll sing a song for you that I know that you have said is among your favorites, and I'll do my very best with a Rodgers and Hart song that
I love. What's this song?
Dancing on the Ceiling.
Oh, I love that song.
Well, I think Dancing on the Ceiling is a curious Rodgers and Hart song because, like The Man I Love, it didn't succeed in the musical for which it was written. It was picked up in England, so I thought it was particularly appropriate. Jessie Matthews made this a hit. She, of course, was a glamorous musical star and made this beautiful and, I think, sort of quite erotic song, really. It was quite daring, I think, the lyric of this song, the Lorenz Hart
It
lyric.
Could be taken that way.
Even though it's, let's say, I won't plant that thought in your head. It's romantic at the least, and I will sing it for you.
The world is lyrical because a miracle has brought my lover to me. Though she's some other place, her face I see. At night I creep in bed and never sleep in bed, but look above in the air. And to my greatest joy, my love is there. She dances overhead on the ceiling near my bed, in my side. all through the night. I try to hide in vain underneath my counterpane, but there's my love up there above. I whisper, go away, my lover, it's not fair. But I'm so grateful to discover she's still there. I love my ceiling more since it is a dancing floor just for my. Go away, my lover, it's not fair. But I'm so grateful to discover she's still there. I love my ceiling more since it is a dancing floor just for my love.
Lovely.
Thank you.
I haven't heard that song for so long. It doesn't get played much.
I'd like the feel that Pete and I did it in. I think it kept it a little bit in the time it was written. I can imagine. I think when you hear it's people play with it a lot more than that, but it has that dancing feeling. But it's a different dance than people do these days.
Yeah, you wanted to have it in the sort of in the mode.
That it was, that it, yeah, was sort then. Of closer to the mode. Yeah,
yeah.
Closer to the mode. Well, it's so much fun looking back with Marion McPartland. I'm Elvis Costello, and we'll have more in a minute. You can find artist information, set lists, and more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. One of the many amusing moments that has occurred during Piano Jazz came when Donald Fagen and Walter Becker of Steely Dan were your guests. Now, these are some very wry and sharp guys, but they were completely stopped in their tracks when you spoke of the occasion of your first meeting with Louis Armstrong and your continuing friendship with the great man. It's, in terms of the show, the continuity your place in jazz provides is unique. I mean, mere pups like Walter and Don are completely dazzled. You could hear them like a...
It was amazing. Yeah. They were like boys sort of going, oh, wow, did you really? Oh, goodness.
But that's delightful because people know them as being sarcastic and very, you know, sharp and a little acid in their lyrics and in their music. And there's a challenge to both things. And here they are, complete fans. And in fact, during the conversation, they talked about being at college and just meeting through being the jazz club kind of guys.
You both went to Bard, did you?
That's right, Bard College in New York State. That was our alma mater. And when I got there, I discovered that there was... I figured that the place would be crawling with musicians, but it turned out that there was only a handful. And Donald was in all of the bands of all the different styles of music.
I would crawl between from one band to another.
He was crawling from band to band, so I figured I should join up with him, you know.
You'd be playing Dixieland one day and Bebop the next.
That sort of thing, although more likely it would be some sort of avant-garde, fake it type of a band.
Yeah, I think actually the first time I saw you perform, Donald, you were playing, was it the Star Spangled Banner or God Bless America on an alto saxophone?
Yeah.
Well, and you had on a leather jacket with black feathers attached to
it.
Yeah,
and that was before Jimi Hendrix played his version of the Star Spangled Banner.
Well, that sounds like a good beginning. I hope there's some pictures of that.
Sadly,
probably not.
If there were, we would have bought them up long ago.
You know what I'd love to know is, like, how did you decide to write songs, and where did that come from?
Well, we met at school and realized we had a lot of the same interests in jazz and also other things, literature and, humor. And we had both been science fiction fans, and I think a lot of... sort of a package of things that a certain subculture used to be interested in the early 60s.
Yeah, we felt we were somewhere in the middle of the rich mainstream of, you know, the cultural zeitgeist. Of course, as time went on, we were disabused of that notion. But, you know, there was a lot of stuff in the late 60s, a lot of cultural energy involving, you know, humor and, sort of...
You certainly have plenty of that.
Yeah, and and so we thought that, you know, why not combine all of these things, jazz, science fiction, humor, and am I leaving anything out?
Rhythm and blues.
Rhythm and blues.
That's...
Really, and rock and roll in one, you know, one package, and then...
Well, it certainly all came together, didn't it? Goodness.
Eventually it did. We had a little problem in the beginning with our songs being sort of too funny for their own good. Our early efforts were sort of, as I recall.
They were just too hilarious.
You were just too hip. That's the problem. Yeah. We were just too hip for the times.
Too hip for the room.
I mentioned that Donald Fagen and Walter Becker obviously began as these student jazz fans. That's where they met each other. And when they came to the show, I think they may have stumped a lot of people. They pulled a song which appeared on Duke Ellington Coleman Hawkins' album. I'd never heard it before. I've heard that album, but the composition didn't register with me. And they revived this Ellington tune and did a fine job on it. It's Limbo Jazz. Let's have a listen, eh?
Okay. Thank you.
Well, there's more to come with Marion McPartland and me, Elvis Costello. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio from NPR. The show that you did with Ray Charles, I've got to say that was one of the most joyful shows to review. Hearing him say, you asked him a little bit about the movement into country music, you know, and the fact that he is at the crossroads of all these different forms of American music, the move from the church to soul music and rhythm and blues and jazz, all in a just in with his identity. And he said, I just hear it in the music. I understand what they mean when they say the name of a type of music. But to him, it seemed as if the idea of the signpost was far less important than the feeling that was in the music. And it was another show in which you accompanied him, which I don't think is not very common for him to have been accompanied. I can't think of another example of him being accompanied in quite that way.
Well,
certainly not solo. It was beautiful. You did Am I Blue?
Yes, I remember that.
Am I blue?
Okay. In that key.
Okay. Am I blue? Go ahead.
Okay.
Ain't these tears in these eyes telling you, baby, am I blue? You hear me? You'd be too if your dreams like your schemes done fell through. There was a time I was the only one. Now I am the sad and lonely one. Yes, I'm alone.
was I gay? Tell me. Now she's gone, and we're through. Am I blue?
Gorgeous version of Am I Blue, and he did a remarkable, well, he did two remarkable things. He talked about the emotional story in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which was a big surprise to me, I have to say.
Love the way he sang it.
And then he did a version of Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, which really was Oh, What a Beautiful Morning.
Yeah.
There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. Yeah. There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. Cone is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Say, oh, what a beautiful morning! Oh, what a wonderful day! I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. Oh, the cattle are standing like statues. The cattle are standing like statues. The car, they don't bend their head as they see me ride by. Brown Maverick winking her eyes, say, oh, what a beautiful morning, man. Oh, what a wonderful day. I'm a beautiful feeling. I got everything going my way. Sounds of the earth are like music. The sounds of the earth are like music. The breeze is as busy. It don't miss a tree. And a little old weeping willow laughing at me. Say, oh, what a beautiful morning.
I think the thing that startled me the most in the program, though, is another compliment to you, is you performed a version of Willow Weep for Me in that show,
yeah,
where it was uniquely you with all of the harmonic imagination. But something that I've noticed that you do when you are in the company of other players is that you lean just a little bit into their style. And I heard you play things in that Willow Weep for Me, which were referencing Ray Charles, which would be something of a surprise, you know. And it's a real talent that you have, not to mimic, just to, when you are playing alongside in the duets, you are distinct personalities. But when you play your solo pieces and it leads to something that you've also done, which is the portraits of people that your musical
portraits. Yeah, that's been fun. Chick Corea started me on that.
It's spontaneous composition, really.
Yeah, he said he was going to do a musical portrait of me, and he did one, and I hadn't the faintest idea what was coming off. So I said, well, whatever you do, leave my nose out of it. And when he was finished, I was very impressed, and I said, well, I'd better do something for you. And so I improvised something.
So let's listen to your first musical portrait.
Well,
nobody ever painted my portrait. I paint a lot of other people.
I'll have to tell you what's the ingredients of it. A lot of strength, a lot of humor, a lot of fun, a lot of energy, a lot of creativity, kind, nice feelings, good feelings, a lot of love. We're not going to have time for all this.
Oh, well, you can summarize it. You can summarize it.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Let's see, what key are you in? you have to figure that one out. A lot more I could say about you.
That's nice.
Thank you.
And that started the whole ball rolling. I do a portrait whenever I feel like it. Not
you did one of me at Tanglewood. It was, you know, I haven't sat for a portrait by a painter. So I feel honored in the company that you've kept. Tell me one thing though. We mentioned the musical portraits on Piano Jazz. Is there an accumulated self-portrait of Marion McPartland from your career? Or from your role as the host, without any sort of, I'm putting you on the spot, but is not to be self-satisfied, but is there a portrait?
Is there a portrait of me done by me?
Well, one that accumulates from all your work. What would you like people to say? I said it at the beginning of the show, you always preface the duets on the show with, oh, well, I hope I don't step on this one, or maybe I can do it. But you know that there's a moment in almost every show, no matter who you're sharing the time with, where they are amazed. There are times where you, no matter who it is, you do something that they can't do. And that's why we're all different.
I do?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In every single show I've heard.
I wish I could find out what that is. I'd do it.
Well, of course, if we knew how to write hit tunes, we'd do it all day long. We'd be living on our own private islands, wouldn't we? You know?
Yeah.
And how about the idea of the theme based on a sequence of notes? That's something that I've heard you do with Dave Brubeck and a number of other. Is that a similar exercise?
Yeah, well, that's improvising, isn't it? It's
I suppose it is, but I perhaps because I'm not an improvising musician myself, I think of there being a structure, whether it be a standard or an integral composition from which the improvisation departs, to simply go up to the piano and pick six tones and then say, that's, you know, you play them in any order. That's a bold thing. And I suppose it's what you do in every moment that you sit at the piano.
Well, if somebody will lay down six or seven notes, I can pretty much make a tune out of them one way or another.
I think the results of doing it in the company of some of the people that you have done it with has been very interesting, though.
Well, they're showing off.
No, well, both your inventions and theirs, because given that exercise, and it is sort of like an exercise,
each
person approaches it in a different way. I mean, the results are remarkable. I think the one with Teddy Wilson, it really got into something. Let's have a listen, then.
Okay.
I thought it might be fun instead of me playing a conventional tune, to have you give me some kind of a phrase. I used to have to do this at the Guildhall with classical music, mm-hmm. and see if I could develop something and get something going. So why don't you play me like 4 or 5 notes, mm-hmm. and I'll see if I can put a tune together.
And you'll take those notes and build something from it.
Try to.
All right, let's see.
Oh, okay.
Just whatever you...
Okay, that's a real nice sequence. Mm. Goodness.
Marianne, listening to your portraits or your spontaneous compositions reminds me of when people speak about soul in relation to music, perhaps even more than heart or intellect. I know that at its best, music is divine, and for some, it stands exactly for that higher form of the spirit. It seems to me quite possible that everyone we've ever known or loved through music is with us in the chance turn of a phrase or a signature rhythm or a harmonic choice.
Certain people and certain tunes do have a special meaning, or they show themselves to have a different meaning from that person that plays that tune. I get ideas I've never had before from certain people and how they play and sing.
And I think you have certainly captured many of these ingenious personalities in this series, so they will be forever enduring.
You bring amazing psychological insights into all the listening you've done. You've listened so intently. You've brought out things that I never thought of myself.
Thank you, Marianne. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but certainly not out of material. There is so much more to say and hear. Can we come back next week and continue?
I will love it.
Thank you, Mary.
And thank you for being here. I've enjoyed it so much.
You've been listening to part one of a two-part special edition of Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland being interviewed by her good friend and guest host, Elvis Costello. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Tyler Hartman, mastering engineer David Mitchell, with audio assistance by Dale Anderson and April DeBrossi. The production manager is Grant Jackson. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. You can learn more about the artists and music selections heard on Piano Jazz on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. There you'll also find a link to our free weekly preview podcast, Piano Jazz Shorts. Segments of this program from our archives were made possible in part by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and NPR contributors, which include the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. This is NPR.